This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and good night, and welcome in with me, Dr. Jenothra Archer-Cartwright. I'm a family medicine specialist, and tonight's show, of course, is brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We are a full family medicine clinic, so we take care of the needs of all of our patients, from children to adults. We see everybody, so we do general medicine services, as well as a lot of other things such as home care, concierge services, MD Pen, IV vitamins. We have a plethora of services that we offer. We're located in the Bahamas Heart Center, and you can give us a call if you need to reach us at 326-1521 or WhatsApp 432-4010. Thank you for coming in on Tuesday. We like to talk health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society, of course. And so there's a topic that I've been trying for a little while. We kind of have been, you know, having some social conversations and a lot of and calls and stuff like that. But I want to finish it off because I think it's really important, because next week I want to do a topic related to prostate that I think is important. I had just a funny story on that. I had a patient come in and he was saying some things to me. And finally, I kind of, you know, realized where he was trying to go with some of this stuff. And we just came to the realization that it was a prostate issue. And so we started talking about treatment stuff. And he says, "Dr. Archer, what do you know all this stuff about urology?" And he said, I said to him, "Of course I know about urology. I'm like a mini urologist," you know. So people, sometimes people, and I get this question all the time, like, family medicine, what is it? Are you a GP? So no, I'm not a GP. I am a specialist. And what does that mean to be a specialist in such broad terms? Well, so we do an additional 4 years of training. And so within that, we almost, we start specializing almost in a sense in a bunch of different areas. We kind of put that all together so that we can better provide primary care. And so a lot of the initial treatment stuff that you would get from certain specialties, we can provide. And then when it becomes out of our scope or something that we don't want to really get into, because, you know, we don't want to really be like a specialist in that area, we would then be able to refer you. So a lot of primary care needs within different specialties can be provided by a family medicine doctor. And so that's why I love family medicine, because when I think about being a doctor, I think about someone who is well-rounded, who's able to tackle a lot of different problems, and is also able to say, this problem that maybe, you know, out of my scope, I'm going to put you in the right direction. So we are really the gatekeepers of health. If your family physician can't deal with it, then you probably do need to see a subspecialist, very importantly. So we will ensure that you get the best care as quickly as possible. And that kind of leads into this topic that I've been kind of talking about, but for some reason, haven't really finished, but it's super, super important. And that is this idea of what makes great healthcare. A few shows back, we would have talked about some of the countries that provide really good healthcare around the world. And I'll just touch on them slightly again, but we started this topic and we looked at what are the goals of quality improvements in healthcare. How do you get a healthcare system that's good for people? You know, because we've had some issues, I guess, nationally. But how do we do that? How do we get that? And what are the parameters that make quality and improved healthcare system? So I've kind of done this topic a little bit disjointedly, but I'd like to bring it all together tonight so we can move on to some more interesting things that are kind of coming up. Right. So last week, we just touched on one of the points, which was safe care. And that was basically safe care is given that healthcare environment should always be safe for patients. We know that. And it includes focusing on much of the processes as on the care that's being delivered and by all the frontline staff. So the people that you meet and you, you know, who deal with you in that healthcare process, you've really safely done. And one area where safety can be often compromised is in the handoff process between patients and different departments. So this is something that we really have to ensure is that safety of care. And there are a lot of external factors that can also be involved in that, including patients, families, and loved ones. During ongoing contact between patients and these individuals, nursing, doctors, all that stuff, communication is really a key part of that. I had a family member who was hospitalized recently, and a big part of the complaints was like the communication that the staff was having with the family. And so, you know, that is very important and something that I really gained a lot from being in pediatrics initially, was that we did communicate a lot with the families, and it was important because they're children and they can't communicate for themselves. And so really endeared in me the importance of communication, because it's your child that's in the hospital or sick. You know, you really want to have a good attitude. You want to feel confident in the person, and you want to really know everything that's going on. So taking that into my family practice is really big for me. So I do communicate a lot. I guess I like talking. I don't know. But communication is really, really key. And it can solve a lot of discrepancies and problems that may arise along the way, because a lot of times, sometimes, even when you're a good communicator, people don't understand sometimes. And they walk away saying, yes, I understood. And they didn't understand. So it's really important to even kind of go back and facilitate and kind of hamper in certain things so that people really kind of get the point, because medicine can be tricky, it can be complicated. And when people are in an ill state, their mental state is different. And even their family and the support system might be in a very unusual place. And so we have to kind of take all of that in consideration, especially when training staff to deal with healthcare. So that is extremely important. Safety and communication go hand in hand. Number two, care comes from staying on top of the latest research and information about treatment efficacy. And this includes academic research, clinical trials, epidemiological studies and outcomes of research are extremely important. And I wish we did a bit more of that here, because I would like to see a lot more research that is focused on our population. The problem is funding for those types of things. Doing my family medicine program here in the Bahamas, we have research. So I really got into this whole idea of research being a part of healthcare. But, you know, even with that, when I was doing my final paper, my thesis, my principal research to complete my DM degree, you had to find a way to fund your research, which if you can't find the funding, then you're kind of limited in the things that you do. And so what happens is a lot of people either just kind of end up doing some kind of questionnaire or something that's kind of generic, because, you know, there's a lot that's involved in it. Where do you go for funding in the Bahamas for research? Well, I don't really know. So I actually had to go for like a corporate sponsor, and I actually ended up getting a little bit of sponsorship from a company because I had some ties to, but that's very difficult to do. So I had to kind of make do with what I had. But there isn't like a grant process or anything like that here. So it's very difficult for us to keep up in terms of effective care so much into our population, because we don't have that raw data in front of us. And the research that comes out, it's really kept academically. And I haven't really seen a lot of policies being built off of that. It may be reflected on in an educational sense within the community of medical doctors and stuff like that. But where does it go after that? My research, which was on urinary tract infections, was based on the fact that if we were to actually follow the trends of the way that antibiotics and the infections were interacting and what was susceptible, then we can have policies based regionally and nationally based on that. But, you know, that's something that has to be ongoing and on upkept. And it wasn't like a big, I don't even think they really realized what I was really kind of researching in that way. And it was very different. So a lot of people were just like, oh, what are you doing? You know, so you're not doing like a questionnaire. I did a questionnaire, but it's tied to actually taking samples and using those samples to analyze what's going on in the labs and how are we looking at the bacteria, how it's interacting with the antibiotics in our climate. So I presented that and it was like, oh yeah, wow. And then that was it. So we really tie research into effective care and not just broad-based information coming from the rest of the world, but specifically hone into some of the thing that's happening here. I do have these conversations with some of the drug companies and their reps. The fact that some of their data, when I anecdotally put that into our population and what I look at in terms of how people react to even certain drugs, I might have a totally different kind of outcome. And for me, I would go with my clinical knowledge first. So if I see patients actually having an issue with one particular thing, I'm not going to be compelled to use that particular thing because somewhere it's guided out or somewhere it's suggested that that's the best thing to do. So it has to make sense. And that's why our own research needs to be funded, and it needs to be not funded that's going to like benefit from that, but be something where it's just for the greater good. That's how research should be done. We know in the world that that doesn't really happen, but because you know, research grows where the money is, and the money tends to be with the companies that have an interest. So we do have a bit of a conundrum there. And hopefully, I think one day we can kind of solve that or get back to why we do what we do in the first place, you know? Why do we do medicine? Why do we do healthcare? Why do we do all of this stuff? So it needs to be effective. The IOM recommends that institutions always be expanding their knowledge base about effective care, as well as improving their methods of accessing, summarizing, and assessing information about the latest findings. These include access to clinical guidelines, step-by-step procedures, and other expert judgment. Clinicians should also periodically review to better understand and improve healthcare quality. So that's where it is. Even with the guidelines and everything, still at the end of the day, the clinician has to kind of look at how is it affecting the population, those types of things. Those are the things that we can look at on a very kind of local level. So have a standardized way of kind of doing that. I don't think we have any of that or enough of that. So a patient number three, this one kind of close to home, because this is the way that I was taught healthcare or medicine. So patient-centered care. So the older model, so doctors learn medicine in a certain format. And the older model was very doctor-centered interactions. You know, you go to the doctor, he says, you have this problem, he prescribes you something, you go, or, you know, that kind of thing. A more patient-centered approach is about that family medicine doctors are trained in. And some key quality improvement topics in healthcare and patient-centered care include respect for the patient's preferences and expressed needs, coordination and integration of care, information, communication, education, physical comfort, emotional support, involvement of family and friends. So it will feel a lot different when you're with a family physician, because really the basis of ours is a more holistic approach. That's why my kind of business says, you know, holistic healthcare, because we take a more well-rounded approach, I would say, to the way that we look at healthcare, not as just a singular medicated or thing, but taking the person as a whole, communicating and educating someone so that they can understand their choices and be able to participate in the healthcare experience. As well as coordination and integration of care, because sometimes there are parameters outside of that one visit that would affect healthcare. And so it's up to the doctor and the patient to be able to see how that works And coordinating, integrating that care is going to make that care a lot better. And then patients' preferences in a certain respect, in terms of instead of like kind of forcing a treatment, you provide enough information so that the patient can make a good choice and you can guide them along the journey rather than maybe just suggest this is what we're going to do. Because there are different, everything is not, just one way in medicine. We have different guidelines. We have different ways of looking at problems, different ways of solving them. And a good doctor can look at things from right up from the pathological sense and the physical sense of how a disease process works, and basically can look at different ways of dealing with based on patient criteria. So aspects of patient-centered care, like respect for patients' values, have long been incorporated in nursing education programs. Likewise, you should be incorporating them into our practices of life. So yes, as a family medicine doctor, we do a lot of this patient-centered care, which is basically should be better because you're taking the person as a whole, even right down to a person's spirituality, sometimes guides the way that you would treat a patient in personal beliefs. So integrating all of those things should give you a better care process. How do we now structure that into our overall healthcare would probably require some training, re-education in certain things, and not just with the physicians, but with the nurses and the other care staff as well. So number four on this list is timely care. And so timely care, we all want things at a certain amount of time. And one thing I hate to do, and I do a lot in this country, is waiting. Everywhere you go, you're waiting on lines, you're waiting on someone to show up, you're waiting. I don't know, we love lines. During COVID, even worse, right? Lines everywhere. We need to not be around each other, but we put everybody on a line to wait. So, I think the timely care and the waiting and all this stuff, it's difficult in medicine because there tends to be some waiting in medicine and any kind of healthcare, especially if you have systems that are quite burdened, you're going to have that. But you want to try to do timely care. So the way you structure your system is going to help with that a lot. And so I think a lot of restructuring needs to be done. The way that we look at, people waiting. And so almost in the sense, whether my patients are public or private, I kind of look at them almost a little bit as a customer in a sense, not in a bad way, but in the fact that I don't want them to have to wait like a really long time because me as going to get a service of any kind, whether it be a medical service or not, do not like extreme waits. And if you're going to have to do some communication about what's going on. So healthcare organizations need to take steps to improve their timeliness of care. Too often we hear about the opposite, overcrowded emergency rooms, delays for patients without insurance, shortage of available clinicians in healthcare. Delays are the norm rather than the exception. And that's what you really want to turn around. So a combination of internal and external factors affect timeliness. And according to the article that we were discussing, internally analyzing and refining the actual design of the process is key to having more timely care. So the processes in which we put in place are what we have to look at to change that. And so when we see people lining up, at some of these clinics and having to wait at the emergency room and all these different things, it's that time when the people in charge should look at and see what process that year after year we have the same problem and what have we done differently to change that. If this did not work, if we didn't see an improvement with this program or this way of structuring things, can we do it a little bit different? So that type of analysis is required to look at the design process of it all. How is it designed? And I think, Bahamians are really chaotic. And I even have sometimes have to talk to my staff and kind of remind them of what what is the goal and what I want, because people get very comfortable and they go back into bad habits. But we have to understand that if you don't have a proper design process of how you have a system, then you're going to have that chaos. And I think we haven't solved a lot of problems in the last 20 years. We're constantly having the same problems. And it's one of the reasons why I kind of came out of the public sector, is because we have these same problems. People put up solutions. There's no change. And so therefore, sometimes you have to be in a space where you can design that process yourself just to make that more efficient. So there needs to be a constant conversation about patient timeline. How long do patients spend in the different stages of their stay in your facility or wherever you are? These are the kind of conversations that you have. You have to have those on a very detailed level, and you have to have a systematic approach to the design of the process. So technology is kind of trying to help us in certain ways, and it's kind of helping us not in certain ways, because there's a lot of different things involved with integrating something like technology into things, because sometimes technology can make faster and sometimes it can slow things down. Because what I find with a lot of systems, even as they integrate them with healthcare, they don't do them from the perspective of the person that's using the technology, let's say the doctor or the nurse or whatever like that. It's very usually technical, from a technical point of view, and they say, oh, we get some consultation from who? I have no idea. But it's similar to this most recent form that they put on for customs. The app doesn't read the way that the form did, right? So a very easy way of integrating, putting the customs stuff through the computer is if they had built the app to be similar to the form. The app is a new system on top of the technology, on top of a lot of different things, and that's what makes it difficult. So I don't know if they did any product testing to see how people were able to initiate that. But that process, doing that for the first time, took us a very long time to kind of get all of our information into that system, to get all of our, and I think that when they looked at it, they thought it would make it easy because you could scan the passports and different stuff. Some things were made sense. But if they had transitioned that system was very similar to the form that they had, which was kind of very simple. You kind of put on there, you put your different receipts, and you just kind of wrote it in, attached it. But it reads very different. It's very different. And it read almost like an immigration officer was doing this instead of just a regular person. And so it made it challenging, and it took us many attempts to kind of get it right and had to feel through it. And we kind of understand technology a bit. So for people who probably aren't very good with that kind of stuff, I can see how that could be a very, very tricky thing. And so timely care, they do suggest technology. Technology can be great if done right. It can also kind of hold back a lot of things as well. And so culturally as well, I think some of these systems or these apps aren't really adapted to our local culture and the way that we do things. So some of that also has to be integrated, because, you know, cutting and pasting from other countries tends not to work very well here, because we take things on a little bit different. And sometimes I feel like those who are in charge don't kind of understand that sometimes. So I would say technology can be helpful if used. If not, it can also be a hindrance. And I think a lot of people don't want to think that way because they just want to be progressive. Oh, we're just going to make everything on the computer and on the app. But if it's really not saving as much time as it did before, you know, it's got to have some bonuses. And maybe eventually we'll all get used to it, because we're forced into it. It's not even like a choice. Then maybe. So technology, yes, it can be our friend. It can also be a hindrance. I think it's something that we have to weigh and figure out. I know a lot of doctors who just say, no, I'm not doing any like ECW stuff, and they just keep their records. It's much easier, especially some of the older doctors. And they're going to finish off doing the way they do it, right? if it's an easy application, yes, it's going to be helpful. Certain things are also very helpful because patients can access this information when you use technology more often. And so there are some key benefits to that as well. So if you can make it simple, if you can streamline it, you can make it user-friendly, which I find is one of the biggest things, user-friendly. And you can get all the things that you need, medication, look at safety, all those things can be added onto one system, then yes, you can actually make things a little bit better. But if it's time consuming and it's hard to use, technology can be a hindrance even in a complex situation like that. And I've seen many indications when technology just fails and then it's like people are kind of don't have a backup plan. I remember a while back when they were saying that, you know, they were going completely paperless. They brought in some new technology and we ended up using more paper probably because we were printing out stuff. We were doing labels. We were printing out papers because then the scanners would not get the codes off the labeler that was printed for the lab work. So that system over time, you know, they stopped even using the printers for certain things and you went right back to having paper. Just a different form of paper, printed paper. Many times systems are down and so you have to revert back to the old system. And so we have to keep all that in consideration when we're talking about technology and how it will make things more efficient because that can go both ways. And so I'm all for tech if it makes sense. All right. And I think we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back up. We're going to open up the lines and then we're going to talk about the last few things that really make healthcare good healthcare and how are we going to reflect on that here in the Bahamas. So we'll take a quick break here with me, Dr. D. Archer, on The Doctor's End. We'll be back in a moment.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Bueller gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Bueller. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with a loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. From Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Welcome back to The Doctor's End with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer-Cartwright. Thank you for joining us again for this show on health, wellness, and society. We're talking today about the quality of healthcare and what makes a quality healthcare system You can join in with us if you like, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Do you think nationally we are in a good place with healthcare? What can we do? What would you like to see? And what's your issue with it? Or do you think that we're doing an amazing job and we just need to keep kind of plugging at it? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. So 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So we've got a couple more points, and then we kind of look a little bit at Singapore before we wrap up, and then we kind of tidy up this whole topic that we've been talking about. And so the number four on the list of what really makes a great healthcare system, we talked about timely care. And making sure that, you know, people are seen in an appropriate amount of time. And I think healthcare around the world has struggled with that. But every day we try to improve. And we'll look at what some of the really great healthcare systems are doing and why they are better than everyone else. So efficient care. When we talk about efficiency in healthcare, we're talking about using financial and tangible resources at our disposal in the most efficient way. And so efficiency has not always been a hallmark of a lot of healthcare systems, including the United States. So when I think about great healthcare, the USA is really not up there. If you look at some of the countries we'll look at in a second, USA is not in that. So they may not be the persons to model our healthcare systems from. A lot of those are, some of them are the ones that are subsidized and have a really good private care system as well. So people have options and choices, as well as we'll see in number six. So as the growth in healthcare expenditure continues to rise nationally, reining in high cost while sustaining or improving care quality in our facilities is going to be vital. So how do we take all this money and use it appropriately is really the key part of this. And to still provide really quality care for our Bahamian people. We use about almost 8% of our GDP for healthcare. So this is over $200 and something million that's going into healthcare. And we do have a lot of chronic disease and issues. And that's why primary care is really, really important, because we have to think of the future generations. And do we wanna be spending our dollars a lot more effectively in the next 5 to 10 years? And what would the health of the nation look like? Because health and productivity for a growing nation are extremely, extremely important. So we have to create models where our resources are being used to pinpoint any inefficiencies. And this will help us to reduce costs and expenditure whilst improving the quality of our healthcare. And these are the things that we need to look at. On how do we now figure out what's missing? How do we put funds specifically in those places and look at ways that we may not be using funds so efficiently? And this is how we have to fine tune our healthcare over the next few years. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Okay, there's a Doc in a voice along with you, Dr. Dinocha Acha.
Yes, sir.
Let me say something. You're not only a pretty doctor, you're an intelligent doctor. I listen to you. Let me ask you something. Now, private, the information that you gathered from a patient or for a patient, that's supposed to be private, right? You upload that on your app, right? You have a nurse who was on vacation or who was off, who are not privy to your computer, and they come on to work with you that day or that morning, whatever. They don't have the information in which you put on your app, right? So only you have the key to that. You have the PIN for that. How do that nurse work with that patient for you until you're ready for that patient when they do not have the information in which you have on your app?
Oh, you mean like if it's an electronic?
Right.
electronic. It's very similar to if it's not electronic. So nurses are privy to your notes in a sense, but they have to kind of swear a confidentiality, just as doctors have to swear on confidentiality. It's confidentiality is very big in healthcare. I wouldn't say that you would have a lot of people that would be doing anything with the notes. In fact, people sometimes don't even want to see what's on your notes because they don't even want to be in problems with that, because that's one of the things doctors can get in big problems for, or nurses or any other staff like that. Now, with electronic medical records, which is probably one of the really cool things about it, one of the good things about electronic medical records is it digitally assigns a character for everybody. So if a nurse was to go into a patient's note, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, you can have the system set up where they can only see certain things or access certain things if you want to, such as sometimes even in labs, like if some labs are very things that you want to keep confidential, your access can be separated. So the doctor can have a different access to that. You understand what I'm saying? We could look at the same note, but you may not have access to all the things that I have. And
I
then the doctor would have to digitally lock that note. Nobody could change that note once the doctor has locked the note on a digital note. So let's say I locked a note. Somebody can't come back and change it or do anything to it like that. That same doctor would have to come back in and do that themselves, and the computer actually records that.
Well, let me ask you something else. Suppose you were to go on vacation and the nurse are not privy to that note because you are on vacation.
No, they could probably see the note, but they won't be able to make changes to the notes, right?
And I got you.
You can restrict certain access to notes, but they could see, they'll be able to see, okay, this patient was in here on June, this maybe is medication, this is what we need, doctor who could do X, Y, but they can't change anything on that note. And when they do access that note, it is digitally recorded. So if the people, who structured the app can go back and say, well, how did this person do it? Well, John was in that note January 7th at 4 p.m. And that's almost maybe a little bit even better than when you have a paper note. And this is where there are some positives to a digital note, is that if somebody looked at your note, just randomly flashed and opened your paper note, you really don't know who would have done that. But every time someone accesses your digital note, there's a timestamp with that. So there's positives to it, there's negatives to it, So I wouldn't feel, when it comes to confidentiality and information, I don't really feel a bigger difference between the two, because your notes have usually, whether they're paper or digital, there are going to be certain people who are going to see it regardless, the nurse, the doctor, certain things like that. Definitely, it may even be a little bit safer because someone who is not on that team to deal with that note would not have access to even the computer in which to see it on. Okay, I hope that answers your question. All right, caller, we have another caller on the air. Caller, are you there? Hello? Is he? I think that is somewhat dropped. I don't know. You can call back, caller. That was not us. You just seemed like you were far away and breaking up on us. So yes, there are positives and negatives to just about anything. Some of the positives are really with the electronic note. If you sign in or you're looking at a note or whatever, that you would have to access that person's computer once they opened it, which is pretty much unlikely to do that. So safety in terms of that is pretty good. Instead of your note just being around on a shelf or whatever like that. But I would say from my experience that healthcare professionals here are pretty professional in that manner. And we all do kind of sign up for like a moral cause, and it is kind of like legally binding as well. So I don't find that we have a lot of issues with people like that information to do anything about it. It's just one of those no-nos in healthcare that people don't specifically give out your information. Like, oh, John Bing had this problem. I've never ever really seen that go outside of the small medical community or unit of things where it becomes a problem. So I don't think that's a big thing here. I know people get worried about it, especially if they have a specific diagnosis or something like that. But I think we do pretty good with that, actually. Especially for a small country, we do pretty, really, really well with that. Our nurses and doctors, we keep a lot of stuff in our to ourselves. All right, so I don't know if that, I'm going to check one more time to see if the caller is back. Caller, you back? No? Okay, we're going to move on. So the next one, the final one on this particular is an equitable care system, and equity refers, I don't always like this word equity, but in this case, I'm just going to keep it. Equity refers to universal access to healthcare services. While those in healthcare industry might, in theory, agree that equity is important, the reality is that patients do not all have the same access to healthcare services. So the challenges for equity within a facility can differ depending on location, funding, access of resources. Disparities can be created by this inequity related to ethnicity and socioeconomics. And so they talk a lot in the States about like ethnic, differences in equity. We are a majority Black country. So I think for the most part, I don't think we have such far-reaching ethnic issues. We have a portion of Bahamians who are white, what we would consider white, a little in between, and then a very large Black population. And so I think socioeconomics plays a greater role in any type of inequities that might be in healthcare. So lack of insurance, or being underinsured, or where you're located geographically, inequality in America, they call them rural practices or places. Here, we know that the family islands do not have the same access to all the resources and healthcare systems because we are an archipelago. So as a country, we are spread out quite uniquely, and it's always been a challenge to facilitate the type of healthcare that everyone deserves in all of those places, being that we're spread out like that. I think it comes with the idea and understanding that we're an archipelago, that we should be planning our healthcare system the same way and bridging those using a lot of different things, whether it be technology, cultural things. All of those things are important because as an archipelago, we have to plan and be strategically different than other places, like landlocked places that people can drive and just find their way to. We have boats and planes and all of this stuff. I think one of the things that we wasted was the telehealth. So a lot of those things were set up inside clinics around the country, and I don't think we use that enough, as well as we do need to have some type of revolving system where we can have certain specialists that are going to be on some of these islands. But this means thinking of the Bahamas in a contextual manner in which the Bahamas as a whole, as a group of islands, specifically see our needs for our local and everyday Bahamians as a priority when we set up our healthcare system, right? It cannot be, okay, caller, you're back? Or a new caller?
Hello.
You're on the air?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, good night, Dr. Archer.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. The thing is, I've read so much, and then my mind is, I don't know, it's just always uneasy. It's always able to have a dialogue. I mean, truthful, deductive dialogue, right? Something is wrong with me. You tell me what it is. I need to be diagnosed. I was in the barbershop one day, years ago, and a psychiatrist was there, or a psychologist, and he gave me his card and tell me, he was so impressed with the things I was saying, just my concept, my psychological outlook on this BS, this life, right? Subterfuge and scientific dictatorship is becoming so real for me until I'm vexed. It has me angry. Like, when I look at, there's a new article out, it was why farm, Big Pharma, but it says why Big Pharma changed. This is what it says now. Why, you know, I always knew this particular thing about Big Pharma, right? As far as Big Pharma working together along with the media and other conglomerates to really control medicine, right? And it's frightening, Dr. Z, what they're doing in the mental illness era, right? Paradigm, right? Like, as far as mental illness, right? And so we see where there have been increasing mental illness, anxiety, coming up with terminologies like social anxiety disorder, and then what was the name of the drug? Plaxival or whatever name, right? And the investigative journalist found out this is actually GlaxoSmithKline pushing this particular pill. All of these things about ADHD, I mean, they exist, right? But you look at the side effects versus, you know, it's really sickening. But let me touch at home here. First of all, healthcare, you know, you are very sensible, requires from a patient's perspective also. So, of course, you are doing a good job, along with your colleagues, Dr. Pinto, Dr. Stevens, Dr. Robbins. Let's say, I love Dr. Cooper. He's very, you know, he likes to listen to me also. Talk to Kalmar, Bethel, all these guys, man, people who believe and who minds are not stuck on what they were taught and didn't get caught or bought, right? Now, Dr. D, I don't know why people think I'm some high society person because the way I sound or talk on the radio. I'm not really looking for all that. You know, I'm vexed about the way healthcare is being going on. The biosecurity paradigm is frightening for me. It's dystopic. Dystopian. You know, and so when you walk into the hospital, I was there to get some medication on Saturday. This is a human story. I'm sorry, okay? Firstly, the box that I had, you know, I go there because of the price is cheaper, and I pay for it. Most people look in for it, but I pay for it. So what happened was the refill was up, but Dr. Stevens had written a prescription for me, like, you know, maybe like about a month ago. So it has refills on it, but it's not in the system. It's not computerized, so... The lady to the pharmacy, she told me, oh, it's up, but I have a receipt, I left it home, but it's not in the system, so it's not computerized. That's what I'm saying. And so that means, you understand what I'm saying, Dr. D? Obviously, if I need to be on the medication, then it should be in the system, and then all of these things should be computerized. I shouldn't have to leave the pharmacy, go to A&E, and so the doctor, of course, she is in trained in empathy, right? So she's telling me, because, you know, I look healthy and normal, she's telling me to sit and wait with the A&E patients just for her to write a prescription. So I walked off, and so I just, you know, understand. I walked off because, I mean, I didn't mind waiting like about 10 or 15 minutes, but she said she just can't write the prescription like that. So I just walked off. So all of this is really based on the synchronized, computerized system. So it isn't working for somebody like me. I share this with you, right? I'll have a dialogue with anybody, with anything when it comes to medical, you know, and I'm very ignorant. But what I could do, I speak on what I observe and what I know. And my level of, my threshold of knowledge is I'll hear the dialogue with many. So what I'm vexed about, and even as I speak to you, things slip my mind. I'm so hot right now, I even forgot. But I really, really, like, as far as the healthcare system, when I look at A&E and how long they taken to finish that little piece of thing there in front of A&E, right? That sends a message to me. And then you mentioned something that reminds me of eugenics, right? Because I see the world different because of the information that's in my head, and I'm scared, and I cannot help it. And so I look at when someone does not have medical insurance, right, health insurance, I look at that as a eugenical concept as far as the public health care system is concerned. It's almost like a death sentence then. So it's eugenical. It's designed to get rid of the poor, for sure. And so even if it's not designed to get rid of the poor, and that's what it's doing, my psychological outlook, that's what it's doing. You understand me, Dr. D? Because you just spoke about the length of time it takes to get healthcare.
So that's why I feel even our public care system should be at a certain standard. And then, you know, insurance, private care is just something additional you want to do. You want to just, you know, I don't think it should be so, so far apart. I think it should be a choice where you're like, oh, if I'm going to go to the public health care system, oh, I feel like going using my insurance and doing something.
But
it
shouldn't be such a
gaping hole.
Yeah, like Dwight saw not somebody on this last week. I wanted to call it because what happened is she was from Doctor's Hospital. So she was urging the blood test. They have a prostate test going on for $30. I probably go do that. But what I'm saying is,
they're not our sponsor anymore.
but when I look at what I wanted to ask them was the fact that if they could dumbed down or reduced the price of the MRI. And so the MRI would be a greater intervention coupled along with the prostate-specific antigen test. But with me right now, like how I am on the Avodart, right, Dr. D?
Mm-hmm.
And so we know the hormone imbalance of dehydrotestosterone and versus testosterone, right? Now, data has never been collected. I don't eat meat, but I still develop BPH, okay?
Yeah, because it doesn't have anything to do.
I eat a healthy diet, I exercise, I get a lot of sunlight in my younger days, but lack of sunlight is being linked to prostate cancer, not BPH, but, you know, BPH along...
We got a lot of sun, and I'll tell you, a lot of behemoths have prostate issues. Now, y'all don't eat... they said there's what is it called, in tomatoes that help with the prostate. I find that other than Kong Salad, behemoth men, I'm just realizing don't eat a lot of tomatoes. I don't understand that.
Yeah, but Dr. D, I've been on a basically 50% plant-based diet, one cook, two meals a day, like for a little while now. So I'm just saying that anyone could get this then. If someone like me was exercising and do all these things, and they're getting it. So what I'm saying is sunlight is, a lack of sunlight is being linked to prostate cancer, right? But what I'm saying is I eat the pumpkin seeds, and we must delve into these paradigms because not only tomatoes has lycopene, I found out that guava has lycopene. I've also found out that resveratrol is in mulberries, so obviously a lot of berries. And so we have things here, but the information must be hard. You know, I can't just read this stuff, know this stuff for years, and then don't share it. So when I say it, it's the information era. People could go and look it up and see. Because what I'm saying is I'm afraid that, you know, the therapy is very messy. So the the MRI will be able to detect cancer if they really end up saving lives before it reaches too late. So it's the MRI high, impeding medical intervention, which is their intention, it seems to me. You know, I'm sorry for this mind I have.
Well,
okay?
Well, you know.
You could forgive me, right?
Yeah, we need more competition. And I think at this point, you have to realize that government is going to be the solve all for everything. And so I think government needs to step out of the way and
How you doing it now, Dr. D? Public discourse. Yeah. Dr. D, I have more respect for you than the government now because I see what they're doing. You see what they do to the woman in immigration? Come on, man, Dr. D, man. Some women have more going on.
I have not. You know, I've decided, and I haven't been really keeping up with a lot of politics lately because I believe in working towards the things that I talk about. So I believe in trying to do those things. And the politics, because it's the same stuff over and over again.
Hey, Dr. D, I got a joke for you before I go. You want to hear it?
All right. Go ahead. You got one.
Where are they going to finish this big multi-trillion-dollar operation at the A&E? Because this is what it seems like to me. Bless up. Give thanks.
No, from I was in the union, they were working on that, so I have no idea, and I wish them the best with that. We have a comment from online. Dr. D, do you see ancient medical wisdom making a comeback, or do you believe that modern medicine is a better way to go? I believe a bit of both. You can take some things from some ancient wisdom or way that we did things in the past, and you can incorporate it with, you know, maybe more efficient ways of doing it through medical technology. And so, you know, I am classically trained as a doctor. So I do believe medicine at the heart of it is pretty good. I think in some aspects, just there's been some stray due to some, you know, let's say what I like to call, a bad form. I like capitalism, but then some people can abuse it, especially if you have monopolies in that state. So what we're seeing is a world where there are a lot of monopolies. And when you don't have competition, competitiveness, then things can start going astray because you have one group of people wanting things to go a particular way. And when you have proper capitalism that takes in regard the sensitivity of the needs of the public and why they're actually doing what they're doing, then you have a better outcome. So there are some things from our ancient way of doing things, like just eating fresh local fruit is going to be important. And the reasons why our ancestors ate certain things, did certain things are important. But they also didn't live long a lot of times because of the way they ate and the way that they did things. So we have to take the knowledge from the past and we have to improve upon it. We can't throw it away. If you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going. And we have to use that information with what we have today and the way that we do things, because there's some great things about modern medicine that we would never want to get rid of, right? And then there are some great things from the past that we either have not continued properly, lost that need to change. And so when I was taught medicine, the first treatment for everybody was lifestyle changes. So I don't know how, why people don't realize that that's actually the first step of most medical treatments. The fact is that we've kind of gotten away from that because a lot of the science is being produced by the same, by the pharmaceutical companies in a sense, which is we need some of this medication, but we've lost track of what our core foundation is, and we have to get back to that. So, you know, my programs usually have a lot of lifestyle changes, and then we tweak and we work with medication and tech, you know, technology as much as we can. Another thing, Dr. D, be honest, when we look at the healthcare system, it's almost the same way we look at our minimum wage. The government and previous governments have been failing the Bahamian citizens miserably because of their small minds. This is not me. This is a comment from offline. The only time they think big is when it comes to themselves. Wow. So I understand, Texter, what you are saying for sure. And I think a lot more mindfulness needs to be put in place in healthcare, in education. Those two things are very, very important for our future. They should be a priority. They should create opportunities. They should look at systems. And we need to fix these problems for once. And they are fixable. I don't think there's any problem that we have in education or healthcare take with, you know, we can make an impact with within 6 months to a year. So we just need the systems in place that do that. And so we're out of time. We did get through the listing of everything tonight, so we can go on next week to probably talk about prostate and BPH, since it did come up a lot. So thank you guys for listening with me, Dr. D, on the Doctors In Here on Guardian Radio 96.9. I'll see you guys next week for more health, wellness, and society. Good night.